The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, so let's get things going with the latest joke of the week from Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the bass player of Guns N' Roses, Duff McKagan. Here we go.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan calling you. Hope everything's well there. I had a question for you. Do you know how to tell the difference between a frog and a horny toad? Well, a frog says ribbit, ribbit, right? And a horny toad says rub it, rub it. Thank you very much.
Actually, that was pretty good. I like that. Rub it, rub it, ribbit, ribbit. Good stuff from Duff. Always make sure to take the time to call me from wherever he is. Obviously, doing some rehearsing and some training right now for the Guns N' Roses summer shows. They're still out there rocking. I wonder how many of those jokes he tries on his bandmates before sending them to us. We know that him and Axel like bad jokes. So maybe Axel is giving him a few of these jokes that we're hearing. These could be directly from Axl Rose. Who knows? All I know is that Duff is a great guy and good brother, getting ready for the headlining appearance at the Download Festival later on in June, I believe it is. And Fozzy getting ready to hit the road again as well, all the way out to, actually we're hitting the road in July, and we got a show in Winnemucca out in Nevada May 26th. Lots of stuff going on. We've got a lot of gigs. I'm going to actually go online right now as I'm talking to you fine people and look up all the gigs, because right now I have a partial list. I don't want partial list. I want the full list of the Fozzy shows upcoming here this summer, and I'll give them all the details as I wait for them to show up, and here they are. Because not only is the Judas Rising tour starting in August, but we've got July 12th, Rock USA. That's in Wisconsin somewhere. July 13th, the Cadott Rock Fest in Cadott, Wisconsin. Peoria Riverfront, that's in Peoria, obviously. And then the Apollo Theater in Belvedere, Illinois on the 15th. So that's July 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. All those shows. Then in July, we got the 26th, we got the Pheasant Festival in Hungary. 27th is in Prague. 28th in Sebron, Germany. 29, Zurich, Switzerland, July 23rd in Italy. August 1st is going to be in Ljubljana, Slovenia. August 3rd, playing Wacken in Germany. August 4th, in Binu in Berlin, Germany. August 6th, Bochum, Germany. 7th is Aschaffenburg, Germany. 9th is the Leyendas de Rock in Spain, Alicante, Spain. Alcatraz in Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. Finishing off at the Bloodstock Festival in Derbyshire in England. And then, of course, the Judas Rising Tour in August. And that's, oh my gosh, so many gigs. Atlanta, Huntsville, Clarksville, Little Rock, Joliet, Omaha. Go to FozzyRock.com. For all gig appearances, there's plenty more coming up as Painless is at number 7 this week on the Billboard charts and the active rock charts. Lots of hits coming out of the Judas record. And speaking of a band that has a lot of hits, I'm talking about Five Finger Death Punch today. Jeremy Spencer on the drums, Jason Hook on guitar are here talking about the early days of the band, how they all got together, what finally convinced Jason to quit his gig as Alice Cooper's guitar player. Nina Strauss has currently got that gig. She's a Talk Is Jericho alumni. He's now in Five Finger Death Punch. Jeremy and Jason are like a comedy duo, a comedy team. They got a lot of details about the new Five Finger Death Punch album and Justice for None. And Jason is talking about the killer documentary that he produced, Hired Gun. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out on Netflix, iTunes, Amazon. It's a great look at the amazing musicians who play alongside some of music's biggest legends and solo artists. Worth checking out. Speaking of legends, they're here. Five Finger Death Punch and Justice for Five Finger. Some ridiculous stuff coming up right here on Talk Is Jericho. Here we go. Okay, so we're here at the DTE Energy Center, and I had to take a cart to come over to the palatial dressing room of Five Finger Death Punch in the rain. Yeah. But it was worth it to talk to Jeremy and Jason here from Five Finger at headlining the show tonight. Well, almost headlining.
Right? I was going to say, are we headlining?
Well, it's co-headlining, but we don't have all the good toys on stage like Rob does. No, so that's okay.
Have you guys ever played shows like where it started just pouring rain?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One time we were playing in New Mexico and it started raining sideways and on the stage and my kick drum filled up with water. They actually stopped the show. Yeah,
because you see those things where like they had like the horrible like the tornadoes and stuff where the stage falls down and all that. Yep. Crazy stuff, you know. It's like that's where it starts getting scary.
Yeah,
for the people in the crowd, right?
For sure.
what are you laughing at?
No, because we've been in those situations where somebody will come back and go, we're on standby, we may not play because there's a, you know, tornado coming through, and we're all like, yes, yes, come on.
Yeah, of course, that's like week 90.
But that's what we were talking about earlier, about how much you guys actually tour. And it, you know, it's like we always wanted to be in a rock and roll band, and it's the best feeling. You guys are at the top of the top, but still sometimes you're like, okay, we got Albuquerque today.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's how it goes. And, you know, we started a little later. We were a little older whenever we got our first shot. Yeah. So
it's interesting, though, because I was thinking about the concept of Five Finger, because you guys like kind of came out of nowhere, but yet you guys had all played for years.
Yeah.
And it's almost in a way like Steel Panther in the fact that all those guys like Ralph, I'd seen Ralph for years playing, mm-hmm. and Russ too, and I think it was like you said, later on they're, I don't know if it was their last ditch effort or whatever, but they formed this band, become huge.
Yeah,
you know, 10 bands later. How was it for you guys? Like how did that all begin? I know nothing about the origin of Five Finger.
That's kind
of
how it was. I was like, I was over it. I've been in Hollywood. Jason and I have been friends for over 20 something years. We were in many different bands together trying to make, you know, our original music like everyone else. And we'd get real close, you'd get like demo deals or whatever, and then it would fall through, or just so close and then you're heartbroken so many times. And I was like, you know what, I'm over this. I'm tired of it, man. I'm just gonna double check one more time and see if there's somebody that wants to form a metal band. So I put shredding double bass drummer in on the internet, and it came up on musicconnection.com. Zoltan had placed an ad looking for a drummer, and that's how we connected, man. That's how
it
started.
It's almost like the old James and Lars thing. Yeah. Instead of doing it through them fanzines,
yeah,
it was through the internet.
That's how it started.
That's hilarious, yep. Man. So you guys were the first two guys to start.
Yeah.
I think we were roommates.
Yeah,
we were roommates sharing an apartment because we were friends.
Right.
And
go ahead.
No. And I took some gigs. I was going around playing with these other people. Mm-hmm. And I would come home and Jeremy's like, yeah, I found this guitar player. He's really, you know, it kind of reminds me of you a little bit. Very aggressive rhythm playing. And I was like, oh, yeah, let me hear it. And he'd play it for me. And I'm like, oh, it's actually pretty good. And because we were always trying to start something together. Because we're buddies,
right?
And we couldn't get signed. It was always something up. So he found this other thing. We were writing songs with Zoltan. I would come back from touring with whoever, and I'd be like, "That would really suck if you land something with this someone else." You know, supposed to be landing it with me.
But were you thinking of it being just a single guitar thing with Zoltan?
No, I mean, we always knew it was going to be a double thing, but I knew that Jason was, we couldn't afford Jason.
Well, Jason was all over the place, and that's something we'll talk about too. You know, all the different bands that you played with and stuff.
He was getting paid well to do music. I mean, we were a brand new band that was broke as shit, so.
How did you convince him to try out?
Well, I wanted
the gig. I didn't, see, the thing about money is, who cares?
Right.
I can make money, I can make it later, I can find it some other way.
You can always get a gig.
You can always get a buck somewhere if you're in trouble, right?
Right.
But I wanted to make records. Like I was playing with Cooper, and I really was like that. You know, you're just a rented musician. So I'm like, I kind of want to be in a band, you know, right. I kind of want to be part, I want to write songs. And these guys had a record deal. That was a huge deal. So I was like, I just got to get in that thing. Jeremy will help me. Luckily, they were having problems with the guy that they picked, the guitar player. Mm-hmm. So after that first record, after the first tour cycle, they were like, yeah, he's not a fit. So like what if we call Jason? They're like, he's still out with Cooper, but we could try. But I was like, yeah, I'll quit Cooper. That gig.
So when you go to Alice, because I know with Mike Inez talking with Ozzy when he left to go Alice in Chains, yeah. Ozzy was super supportive. Is Alice the same way?
Yeah. Alice is great. One of the most wonderful guys. I'm sure you've met him.
Yeah, of course. Best guy.
Best guy ever. Total role model as far as, you know, here's a guy who is very famous, icon, but I like the way he handles himself and the legacy and with people and everything. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, and what a pedigree of musicians that have played with him.
I mean, he does this thing where kind of pays his players slightly above Blue Book for that gig. And the idea there would be that nobody else will poach his players.
Gotcha.
Right? So if you pay them a little, sweeten the deal a little bit, then another band at the same level can't just come and poach your players.
Shit, we paid you less than we poached you.
Well,
but like you said, sometimes it's not about the money.
It's not about the money, because I was telling everybody, it's like, I'm going to quit Alice and I'm going to join this baby band, this heavy metal band. And people are like, is that a good idea? I wanted to be creative. That was very important.
Did you have any bands, Jeremy, like that had a deal at all, anything like that before Five Finger?
No, I was only hired ever to do a tour with Wasp.
No kidding.
And I got into rehearsals with them, and I was this energetic, unknown, skinny, vegetarian kid, and sober, and wow, happy. And you could tell they were just like, who the f*** is this guy? And apparently their drummer, Stet, was calling him at the same time, like, give me my job back or whatever. So they finally realized, okay, let's just not work in this new kid. Let's go with Stet. Stet's great. Yeah, I think he's amazing.
Did you have any relationship with Blackie at all?
Yeah, we did some rehearsal, and it sounded like Wasp. I was like, this is cool. But, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, because right after that happened, I was like, I think I'm done with this. And that's whenever the...
Tell them about the drum kit you bought.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to go...
We were broke.
I had to go audition for Blackie, and I had this piece of shit four-piece drum kit with, like, a double pedal. And I'm like, I got to get a double bass kit. So I went to Guitar Center. I bought this kit. I took it down there. I got the gig, and then got into rehearsals, lost the gig real fast, and then had to return the...
return the drum kit. And the guy was like...
Yeah, because he thought he made his commission for the month.
It's like, hey, man, I got to bring this back.
Sorry. Where are you from, Jeremy?
I grew up in Indiana.
Okay, so is it the old tried and true tale of trying to find your fame and fortune in L.A.?
Yeah, I left home around 19, and I'm like, I'm going to San Diego because there'll be music there. And I went there, and there was nothing there. But finally, I got to Hollywood shortly thereafter, and then that's...
Because you have a great story, Jason, you told me before about how you ended up coming from Toronto to L.A.
Yeah.
Give us the...
I played in a local band in Toronto that ended up getting a record deal and spent a few months in Los Angeles recording that record.
What band was it?
The band was called No Love Lost. It was just a club band. Nobody would know. It was a
Slick Toxic.
No.
It was like that kind of music.
It was but the singer from Slick Toxic slept with my girlfriend, which is kind of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
His name Nicholas Wolf.
They're musicians, you know.
Anyway, it's all good though.
What's it called? Nicholas Walsh.
That's it, right?
Walsh. Yeah. Wow, that's obscure. You know your metal.
Oh, somewhat.
Well, that's pretty good because that's we're talking Canadian.
That's obscure Canadian.
Yes,
metal,
obscure.
Right? Hell of a time.
Like, I just saw a picture of Brighton Rock the other day.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, why are you even doing that?
Remember that guy's super high voice, man?
Yeah.
Jerry McPhee.
Whoa, check you out, dude.
This conversation's taking a turn straight down the 80s.
The listeners are going, what the f*** are they talking about?
So you were playing in this band?
Playing in this band, got a record deal, went to Los Angeles, recorded the record, thought that, you know, it was very exciting. I was 23 years old. To go to LA, it was a huge deal. So, but when after we got back, the band was dropped. We were kind of caught in the middle of that whole grunge killed the 80s move.
It's like the early 90s when you did
Yeah,
this.
Exactly. So we that our band wasn't cool anymore, so we got dropped. And I remember thinking, if I'm going to go, I should go now. I should just, before I get into the 2.5 kids, the wife, the career job and all that, I should just, while I'm free, I should just pack up and go. So I did. I beelined for the border and drove straight to L.A.
Did you have to, like, if it was your dad involved, someone
yeah.
to help you?
I can't yeah, he, well, because I had had a couple really bad experiences with the border. And I looked very metal. You know, I had leather piercings, long hair, you know, the whole thing, right? So
he looked like Mitch Malloy.
Oh, that's good.
With dark hair.
That's good. Yeah, thank you.
Dallas.
And they asked me, would you want to do this by yourself or do you want to do this with Jeremy? I'm like, oh, no, Jeremy. Now I'm Mitch Malloy. Thank you. So my dad had all my gear in his car. Mm-hmm. And so he drove ahead and said, I'm just going across for to shop or whatever. And they're like, yeah, whatever, old guy. And then I came through with nothing in the car. So that way, if they pulled me over, if they got suspicious, I'd be like, look, I got nothing. So, and then we met on the state's side and transferred all my stuff into my car. And I gave him a hug and said, I'll see you. Call me when you it. Yeah, beeline it. Yeah.
I haven't seen him since.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
How did you guys meet up? Because here's the thing. When I was talking to Jackie, your manager, about doing this, I was like, well, maybe they get like maybe get Chris to come do it. I'll get Jeremy. They're best friends. So that's just like, in the band, you guys are the best bud.
Yeah.
So that's what she said.
I was jamming with the former guitar player in Bullet Boys, Mick Sueda. He had he put together a solo thing.
King Cobra too, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So, ready to strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was jamming with Mick for a while, and things weren't really happening, so I ended up splitting from that thing. And then that's when Jason came aboard and was his second guitar player, and they were listening to old demos or whatever that I played on. They're like, well, who the f*** is that guy? Let's get that guy.
Yeah. Who played on this stuff? Because this guy's better than the guy we have. And Mick was like, oh, he's a really young kid. He moved back home. I doubt he would be into coming back. I'd be like, well, ask him because he's really good, and... I'd rather play with him, you know? Well, so anyway, so Jeremy's like, oh, okay, cool. We didn't even know each other. So Mick called Jeremy and said, would you be interested in coming back to L.A.?
So you moved up again.
Yeah,
I'm out.
At that point, my parents had moved to Tennessee or something, okay. So I went there and stayed there
for a while. You were finished with L.A.
Yeah.
And so I actually saved him, and then he saved me.
Yeah.
But so Jeremy comes back. We're in this band with Mick Sueda. Was Brainstem Babies.
Yep. Okay.
And you know, we rehearsed every single day. It was like a real organic band. We really reworked very hard, but eventually, after a few years, we were like, this ain't gonna go anywhere, so we bailed. Mm-hmm. Together, Jeremy and I started writing songs. I would sing one, he would sing one, and we would write and just sing and write. And we were just demoing at a great rate. Got involved with a producer friend of mine, Bo Hill. You must know Bo Hill from the 80s. Yeah. So Bo. Yeah, Bo was like, this stuff is really cool. Keep going. We'll find a singer. But we'll build it up. Then we started showcasing. So it was actually starting to pick up like, ooh, we have a band. We found all the other guys, and we were writing tons of songs. And we did that for a couple of years and wound up with nothing.
So how are you making money to survive and even have a place at this time?
We were piss poor broke.
Yeah, we would eat our meals every day were like, Del Taco, seven layer burritos for like 99 cents.
Yeah.
That's what we'd eat.
We found a place on Hollywood Boulevard that served breakfast for $1.99.
Yeah.
Cherokee Cafe or whatever, Sunset just Cafe.
Ate like shit.
And we would just go there every day.
It tastes like $1.99,
yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Where did you live?
I lived on Cherokee and Hollywood Boulevard, which is like the corner of crack and murder.
It was, dude.
He'd call me up going, I don't know what's happening, but all the ambulances, police are here. There was a murder. They've got the third floor blocked off. I'm like, awful, nice place. Man.
Is it the classic thing where you're looking for like a stripper to buy you groceries? Like, was it that bad? Like in the 80s, the decline of the Western civilization?
Well, I mean, I barely...
I
was working day jobs too, but
he wasn't a ladies' man back then, dude.
No, well, I couldn't have been at that place. Try bringing one back to that place.
Jeremy weighed about 96 pounds and had neon orange hair. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
Or neon yellow.
It was like a weird alternative period and
he was
bizarre.
Not exactly the chick magnet.
No, definitely not.
But talking with you guys, like, there's been so many little metal influences. You guys were both huge metal fans growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like we're all the same generation. Who were your bands when you were a kid?
It started with Kiss. Yeah. Kiss and Devo were my first two bands.
Well, what year with Kiss, though?
Well, I was six, so it was 79.
Okay, yeah. So you got in at that level.
Yeah, right? And then I've revisited
Kiss
the back
and Devo.
Level. Yeah, Kiss and Devo, they were my first two bands, and I think maybe Queen. Then okay. I just started... whatever I
but
could then, find.
But you're throwing out, you know, Mitch Malloy and Nick Walsh references. There must be some metal in there somewhere.
Yeah, of course. Well, we went through the hair band era.
Yeah.
So I learned all that stuff and then the metal era. So I was definitely into Metallica and Slayer and Anthrax. Yeah,
sure. That came later on, though.
A little later.
Because before that, it was all Priest and Maiden and Scorpions before the thrash started.
And I wasn't really a fan of that stuff that much. Yeah, I mean, Metallica was like the first metal thing I got into after Kiss.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What about you, Hook?
I grew up on Kiss and then sort of Van Halen in the 80s.
Right.
I wasn't that eclectic. It was just like, I like just straightforward, big rock and roll.
See, it's funny for me, I got into Kiss because the first Kiss I can remember, besides you see the pictures and the paintings, you know, the paint and all that stuff, but Heavens on Fire came out.
Really?
And that was like, I love 80s Kiss.
Oh, there you go.
That's when I came in. And then, like you said, I came in and worked my way backwards and got into Alive and all that stuff. But
oh, wow.
I'm an 80s Kiss guy. Like, from 84 to 92 with Revenge, I love all those albums.
Yeah.
And it causes great arguments sometimes. But it's like, that's the era that I came aboard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the cool thing. It's like, you're talking about Van Halen. And a lot of people are like, well, Sammy Hagar, Van Halen. Well, obviously, we're Roth guys, or some of us are, but it depends when people come and find you to decide. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd like hanging out in our dressing room then before show, because we're always jamming 80s Kiss.
Oh, always.
All the time.
So you're
always
fans of 80s Kiss too, then?
Oh, yeah.
They had one or two really important songs on every record.
Yes,
that
right.
Kept the interest level and the momentum. I mean, big songs.
Yes.
You know, like, legitimate hits.
Yeah.
There was some filler.
Yeah.
You know?
All the Gene songs.
He didn't give a fuck.
Heard it here
he
first.
Movies,
Chris Jericho.
Yeah. I told him that before.
He was in One of Dead or Alive.
When he put the vault on, I'm like, but are they all like Murder in High Heels?
Oh, like, God.
Like, no, It's My Life is on it. Because remember, there's like the famous Kiss demo, It's My Life.
Yeah.
It's a great song that never made the record.
I remember that.
And I was like, why wasn't that song on it? He's like, I can't answer that. Maybe there's, who knows the reasons why, but you'd have some songs then. What was the first concert you ever saw?
Man, it was supposed to be Kiss, and my parents wouldn't let me go because it was a Dynasty tour, and they were like, this is Kiss, this is like, you know, this. So, but then my dad got tickets to Hall & Oates. I'm like, what the fuck is a Hall & Oates? You won't let me go to Kiss, but I went to Hall & Oates and they kicked ass. It was incredible.
Great, though, yeah.
Lots of songs, man, yeah. But I didn't know that.
You don't realize that when you're a teenager, too, you think Hall & Oates, but they're awesome.
I just saw them recently again, and they were kicked ass. Oh, yeah.
So locked in harmony and everything.
Yeah. The songs, too, the catalog.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. It's like they're the type of band like McCartney that you could go see the set.
Yeah.
And they play, you know, McCartney plays 40 songs, but you could make a whole other set list of songs they didn't play. That would be just as good as the set list they play.
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah.
What was your first concert, Jason?
First concert was Rush 1982 Signals Tour at the Maple Leaf Gardens with the Paolas opening. Bob Rock, yeah.
Nice. I was the Police 1983.
Killer.
With the Thompson Twins opening.
Oh,
nice, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
When you guys started with Five Finger, we mentioned kind of, did it click right away as far as the band getting big right off the bat? Because the first time I started hearing about you guys was like top level stuff, and it wasn't very long.
It was fast. I mean, well, relatively fast. I think it took us about 9 months for our single to break, and then
that's insane. 9 months.
That was it.
after doing this for 20 years or whatever.
And we did six shows and then we were signed. Like, that's, it was really fast.
What was the reason that you think that it took off so fast?
Well, I think at the time there was nothing else like it at radio, and we got people to take a chance. Jackie got people to take a chance on it, and they did. And then people were like, well, who the fuck is this band? And they were into it. You know, they weren't playing heavy music.
What year was that?
This was 2007.
Okay, yeah.
So it was like, they weren't playing bands like us back then.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jason? Same thing? Pay attention.
I'm so, no, honest to God,
there's
I
no
am,
one worse in the am, world at that than
I'm guilty. I just left this room for a second. I did. I'm like,
I saw it in your eyes. You're like,
yeah,
what's
I was
the
just,
question?
I
like,
just left.
It's like when we call you, what's the answer, Mr. Hook? What?
It'll happen, and I apologize in advance. What happens when you get to be our age?
Yeah, exactly. Too much rock and roll.
Sorry, what was the question?
I was just saying, like, Five Finger took off so fast, and Jeremy was saying that nobody was playing that sort of music on the radio because it was very, very quick of a rise.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I would imagine, if I had to guess, I think Ivan really delivers. Like, you believe that he's that pissed off.
Oh,
it's real.
Aggression.
Yeah, maybe just the way. What was it? The bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, you know, he has an intensity I don't think a lot of people have. I mean, that really brutally, I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
people buy it.
Maybe
it makes sense though, because you know, being in a band is very much show business, selling it to the crowd.
Conviction, yeah.
You know exactly, and if you commit to it and you believe it, people will believe it too. It's so important. You know.
Yeah.
What was the first tour you guys did?
Family Values tour with Korn, 2007.
That's a huge tour right off the bat.
We were playing like the parking lot stage, but we loved every second of it, man.
Oh, so that was kind of like an Ozfest type tour.
Yeah. It was the outdoor summer, like Mayhem Fest kind of thing.
That's cool that we did the parking lot stage today. It was packed.
Rules,
was,
man.
It's cool, yeah.
That's where the energy is, man.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Who's, have you toured as far as, like, with, like, the Metallicas and the Iron Maidens and those type of bands? Like, the bands that you grew up enjoying? Did you ever tour with Kiss?
We did tour
with
Kiss.
Yes, we did tour with Kiss.
In Europe, yeah.
Oh, we were so excited. We were so excited, but let me tell you. The Kiss audience
does not
give a shit about Five Finger Death Punch.
Wow.
So we were on cloud. Oh, this is going to be amazing. We're talking to the guys. We're hanging out. It's Kiss everywhere. Kiss. And we're like, yeah, we're on in 20 minutes. We get on and people are just folded arms, just staring at us going, what is this? This is so not what I signed up for.
Because you hear that about certain bands with Kiss. I've heard that about Slayer.
Yeah.
Have you toured with Slayer?
No.
Okay. Yeah. And then... Metallica as well, kind of people just not caring.
They don't care.
You know, it makes sense though. Like if you came, like we did the Kiss cruise.
Yeah.
You know, people are excited and they're there, but they're there to see Kiss. Yeah.
I love the Doc McGee podcast.
Oh, thanks, man. Right. Yeah, that was fun.
That was perfect.
It was in front of like 30 people. But Doc's got so many stories. You know what I mean?
So good.
You know, but speaking of stories too, there's one of the reasons I want to talk to you is I just watched Hired Gun.
Okay.
Great documentary.
Thank you.
First of all, were you like a producer on it, or was it yours? Or
yes. Well, I own the film. I started it with one other guy, way back what 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. And it was just supposed to be this little homegrown documentary, inexpensive. You know, just for fun.
Right.
And luckily, you know, his vision for it was to try to get something that was world beater, global appeal type of documentary. So anyway, it's done and I'm glad you saw it. And what can I say?
No, but I mean, but what can you say? Well, it's like there's so many people in it.
Yeah.
Like you just went through like the whole movie in 2 seconds. What can I say? Like everybody, every musician...
Yeah.
Wants to watch, like our bass player Paul DeLeo played with Liberty DeVito in Billy Joel.
Oh, see?
When Paulie was like 22 or 23 years old, he loves Liberty. I said, you got to watch this movie because Liberty DeVito is like the star of the show.
What a story.
What a story. He was Billy's drummer.
Yep.
And then what happened for him to get fired?
Well, basically what happened was, you know, Billy had his band, but Liberty was his buddy. Liberty was his confidant. Like, out of all of them, the one that he established a great friendship with was Liberty. So when he ditched the band, he kept Liberty for the entire 30-year span.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think what happened was... this isn't so much in the movie, but Billy went through a really bad alcoholic period,
right.
I think a really bad drinking period, and I think what I remember hearing was that Liberty was talking shit about him on the Howard Stern show or some radio interview. Like, if Billy could, you know, keep it together, you know, right, it would be a lot better or whatever, you know. So, and Billy heard that and was like, you know, you still are my drummer, you know, so maybe don't go on the radio and talk shit about me. And then something happened where Liberty lost all his dough to a divorce and then asked Billy if there's any extra dough for your old buddy, maybe you could kick some scraps my way or whatever. That really turned Billy off, because Billy had lost millions and millions of dollars to somebody who was stealing from him. So he's like, I'm not taking care of anybody anymore. Every man for himself.
And that's kind of,
don't ask me for help. I got
right. Did you watch it, Jeremy?
Yeah.
He's in it.
Are you a hired gun? I don't remember it.
I wasn't a hired gun, but there's a segment about Jason and I.
Oh, okay.
It's in there.
So. Your whole relationship is up. Who was the first person that you got that was on board?
Alice. Alice helped, because everyone's like, I don't know, man. Is this a serious project?
Really?
I mean, is this a real movie? Who's doing it again? Yeah. Where's it going to be released? Well, I mean, this sounds a little, you know, because everyone can make a movie now. All you need is a phone and sure, an iMovie.
Well, yeah, right.
So Alice, I mean, you know, Alice was the one who said, you know what, I'll help him out. No problem. Let's set it up. I'll do it. So once Alice, God bless him, once he helped, once he came on board, everybody was like, well, who's in it? Oh, if Alice did it, maybe it's a legitimate project.
Gotcha.
So, you know, Alice, and then all of a sudden you can get Rob Zombie and John Five. And then I can get Eric Singer, and then you can get, you know, I remember we were trying to get Steve Lukather. He said no for like 3 or 4 times. Don't ask me again. The answer is no. I don't want to do it. Why would I give you my story when I can do my own documentary on Toto? And we're like, oh, okay, that's cool, dude. But when he found out that David Foster and Jay Graydon and Ray Parker Jr., these are all his like homies. So, and Steve Vai. So once they all did, he's like, oh, well, he didn't tell me they were doing it. I'll do it, you know?
But it's typical Hollywood. As soon as you get one name,
yeah,
then Steve Vai's doing it, this guy's doing it, right, and then it starts falling, it all falls into place.
Nobody wants to be the first, nobody wants to be the biggest star of a small film.
Right.
They want to be the smallest star of a huge film.
Big film. Right. Was it the story of Rudy Sarzo on there with the whole thing with Randy Rhoads?
Yeah,
was awesome.
Dude. Thank you.
You know?
I had to collect all that footage. You know what's interesting about that, the crash, the Randy Rhoads plane crash, is that Ozzy and Sharon bought everything having to do with all the footage, all of the news clippings. They bought all of it.
Really?
Yeah, they own all of that shit. So we had to not only find stuff, but find stuff that didn't belong to them, because they didn't want anything to do with it.
They wouldn't have anything
to do with it. No. Sharon was like, you know, this is the last time I'm saying no. Do not ask us again.
So are you calling these people? Hey, it's Jason.
I called, yeah.
Because you got like Newstead is awesome in it too.
Yeah, it was basically myself and the director who... Yeah, we would just chase people down. I mean, I asked Paul Stanley a bunch of times.
Just to comment on...
Yeah, maybe you'd like to comment. Let's talk about... Let's talk about the Soul Station.
Right.
Talk about something you want to talk about. Talk about what it's like to hire a brand new band.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Interesting.
Like, what was the process?
Right.
How do you like it? Who did you meet? What does it feel? What's the different feeling from being in Kiss for 40 years? Like, now you have to hire a band. So I thought, you know, everyone can tell you something where you go, oh, that's really interesting. You know?
Yeah.
Like, Eric's interview went on, like, for 4 hours, nonstop.
Well, that's just a typical conversation with Eric to begin with.
Well, because we were like, Eric, is, you know, what do you want to drink? Is there anything I can bring? You want sandwiches? You want? He goes, Perrier. All I drink is Perrier. Okay, cool. So we filled up this cooler with Perrier. Didn't even open it. Didn't even open the lid because he just talks a mile a minute. We're like, so somebody cut him off? I mean, should we wrap this? Or like, it's already 3 in the morning.
But that's him,
though. I know.
I love, and the other one was Kenny Aronoff. What a great story he has.
Oh, Kenny, too. Yeah.
Like his.
You ever met him?
I never have.
He's a bundle of energy.
Is he?
Yeah. I always like brace for impact when he's around. Jason! Oh. I like go into crash pose.
But you see his discography of like all the bands he's played.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. Incredible.
I think, I don't even remember what's the number that he says. Is it like...
Of albums he's...
Like, I think he said something like 1,500 or some ridiculous
I'm sure.
Like that.
Yeah, he's been the go-to guy for a long time.
So did you fund it all yourself?
I paid for half of it. And then we had another investor who took the other half.
Wow. So when you're doing this, What's the budget on that?
The budget?
Yeah, did you have a budget or like?
Well, the movie cost $1 million.
And then you have to market it, or did you have to sell it? Like, I've never.
Oh wait, we have a sales agent. We've went through a few different people. Started off with William Morris, who books the band.
Yeah.
But they're too, almost too big. Like, they're dealing with $150 million films, you know. So, you know, our little documentary didn't really find its home there. But we found a wonderful sales agent who has been, you know, cooking up deals. Goes to Netflix in December.
So it goes to Netflix, and then do you start, like, do you shop it around to the festivals and stuff like that? Like,
well, no, it's all about. I mean, there's deals for, like, your physical. Your Blu-ray DVD is one deal. That's through Sony Global, all over. They're doing the Blu-ray DVD. And then you've got your streaming, your Hulus and your iTunes and your Amazon, stuff. And then Netflix is its own deal. Luckily, when Netflix kicks in, it's not an exclusive to Netflix deal. Mm-hmm. So while it's being shown on Netflix, you can still purchase it and stream it and rent it, buy it if you want to, if you're not a Netflix person.
It's great, like when you finish making a record, or like I'm sure making a movie, just that feel like writing a book, just like, oh.
You have no idea. Well, plus I'm hemorrhaging dough trying to complete this project.
Right.
You know, so like when it finishes, you're like, oh, okay, no more hemorrhaging.
Did you have Rob Trujillo on in that?
We did set something up with Rob. Never did interview him.
Because Rob went through it too. He did the Jaco Pastorius movie. And the same thing. Like he actually, it's funny because I just found out that my name's in the credits. Because he was doing, I think, a GoFundMe for it.
Yeah.
And I had him on my show, and that put him over the top.
Yeah.
And because he's like, listen, I don't have Black Album money. I didn't play on Enter Sandman.
Nope.
So Five Finger, like, big band in the States, worldwide. What are the other countries that are big for you?
UK is huge for us.
Canada's our second largest market.
Right. Is it really?
Yep. Canada's our second largest market. And I think, I mean, we're really trying to put together a coast-to-coast Canadian tour next year.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
Like all the way from like Newfoundland.
We tried it last time and we almost made it all the way across, but we didn't go all the way to Halifax. We played Halifax, didn't we?
Yeah, I think
What do you think of Canada when you go like to the Maritimes and stuff? There's some strange people up there.
They're really nice though, man. I like it.
They're real good people.
Yeah, yeah. Canada is all good.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm Canadian, so I think they give us a little extra love because they're like, ooh, one of the guys is Canadian.
Right.
Was in the Killer Dwarves.
Were you in the Killer Dwarves?
I was in the Killer Dwarves.
Dude, okay, hold on. Go through all the bands that you were in.
Oh, God. Awesome. Chris Jericho here, everybody.
Well, you said it all the hired gun.
Well, let's see. Where do I start? I think Bullet Boys, Killer Dwarves, Vince Neil, Mandy Moore, Hilary Duff, Alice Cooper, Safe Ferris.
Yeah, you're in Safe Ferris.
What's Safe Ferris?
It's like a ska band. It was like from the ska K-rock. Yeah,
for about 8 minutes I was in that band.
What a great name, Safe Ferris.
Safe Ferris. Well, you know, when I was in LA, I was like, you just play your guitar and get paid for playing your guitar. Don't waste, like, I don't want to spend all day at Starbucks, and then when I get off Starbucks, I go play music. Mm-hmm. I thought, it's got to be a better way. I should be able to play music all day and get paid for it.
But, dude, that's the thing. Like, you're learning your craft, too. Like, I bet you're playing, like Mandy Moore and Hilary Duff, those type of guys. Like, the dude that you have in the documentary that plays with Pink.
Yeah, he's
Or, like, you
vicious.
Know, Nuno Bettencourt's in frickin' Rihanna.
Yeah.
They got some killer players.
Yeah.
So you must have made good cash with those two.
At the time, I was so broke that, you know, when they talk about paying you a couple thousand bucks a week, you're like, holy.
Yeah.
I am laughing.
Was it a lot of teenage girls type thing in the crowd? Or
It was really weird because obviously the girls are really young. You know, it's like all the friends come to the show, but it's the mothers. The mothers were like, winking and wagging their tongue at me, and I'm like, all right, I know we're the same age, I get it, but not here.
Were you guys over?
Hey, there he is. Hey,
hello.
What's up, Jake? Chris. Hey, man. How are you doing, man? Good to see you. You all right?
I'm doing all right, man.
For all you, for everybody listening, Ivan Moody just walked into the room.
Podcast going on right now. A little bit, once in a while.
Good.
You got any orange Gatorade on you? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
I got a picture of Ringo Starr in my dressing room. I'm trying to replace with somebody cool.
Wow!
Whoa! Hearts.
There you go, Sarah McLachlan, right there.
Is that who is that? Is that
Sarah McLachlan?
Oh, well, then don't take her.
Take that one.
ZZ Top. Take that one. So Ivan has taken the ZZ Top.
I forgot about your obsession with stealing things off the wall.
Nailed to the wall.
Don't do it.
Yeah. They knew you were coming.
Can we get a mechanic in the dressing room, please?
They were new.
That's all right.
Replace Ringo with a real guy.
I think there's a Pete Best picture down the street. You can look at that one. Yeah.
He's probably got something really cool, Madonna's dog or something.
Thanks, man. Were you guys a little cameo from Chris and Ivan?
Yep.
He was happy today. Were you guys over in Europe when that thing happened at the Bataclan?
Yeah.
Yes, we were. Yes, that's right. I remember that. We were texting.
That's right.
And I was like, dude, what's up with where are you guys?
What did you guys do?
Well, most of the people that we were touring with or at the same time went home.
Right.
We said, nah, we're Five Finger Death Punch. Come and get us, motherfucker. No, we didn't. We stayed and what did we do? I think we skipped a couple shows. There was a gnarly show where they were actually there was a hot zone. Where was it?
I can't remember, but we were also, we just decided we would get through the best we could, but we had to cancel a couple shows because it was just too dangerous.
Nobody's going to go to a rock and roll show the next day.
Yeah, like we were advised against it kind of thing.
Were you over there when it happened? Like, did you have a gig?
I mean,
what country were you in?
We were somewhat close, but it wasn't like a threat to us.
Yeah, like we were in the Netherlands, which I think was about 2 hours away, but we had a Paris show a week later.
No shit. So did we.
And you guys played yours and we played ours. I think we were the only bands only bands, but I know a lot of bands split. But we were the same. It's like, why leave? You know, like you can't let them win that way. I remember that you guys were over there. I just wanted to kind of see what was your mindset to stay.
Well, it was a little uneasy. You'd be up there and we were like, you know what, maybe kill the spotlights because you can't see and that's the only thing.
Yeah.
So we did some shows without spotlights. I remember that.
Right.
But we got through it and it was cool. You know, the crowds were still enthusiastic and it was their escape. And
that's what I was thinking. Like, it does. If two people show up, we're going to play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And believe me, I was watching the back of the room too, like waiting to see like if anybody comes in here with any weird shit going
That's
on.
It really it. It was just the you know, everyone's on high alert.
Yeah,
you
for
know?
Sure.
We were like going into these venues and saying, just make sure we have a clear path out. Like make sure everyone knows where the door is and make sure it's unobstructed and we can get out if we have
security,
to.
We had extra security and they
extra
were...
Extra security.
They
don't
walk
let
us
any,
through where to go and what to do. So it was cool.
Yeah.
And the fans were super appreciative of it too.
For sure.
But it's hard enough to do a long tour overseas, but you add that shit to it. I mean, because the crew is starting to go like, we don't care. It's not our business. Yeah. We just want to get away from danger.
Right.
And make a little money, you know? So.
Yeah. Do you need to go? Can we get another 5 minutes?
We start to do more. This is going to be the worst podcast you've done.
Okay, I'll just wait. I just need another like 10 minutes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, is that cool?
Cool.
Yeah.
This happened, by the way, with the Scorpions. What? Rudolph Shankar. Oh. Their manager was a real jerk, and he took him when he goes, I'll come back. I think of three or four more questions, and I'll come back and do some more. So there you go.
Did he get ripped off, though? Did he come back?
He did.
Okay, cool.
All right, so how was the signing?
Woo! It was cold, but it was good, man.
We've had the whole day of Five Finger Death Punch here today. We had all the guys come in, and you guys did a bunch of press. And I'm such an idiot. I'm like, well, you know, we got this podcast, and I usually like have an hour. But I forgot to tell Jackie that, and she had me scheduled for 20 minutes. So I'm already the bad boy. So,
oh, that's okay.
Thank you, guys. So, and much better than the Rudolph Shankar experience.
What was that? Tell us.
So what happened was he had this real idiot of a tour manager, whatever. So they're not working with him anymore. And the guy was like, he kept trying to cut off the interview, but Rudolph wouldn't listen. He just kept talking. And the guy was basically standing right there, and then finally went, you're done. You're finished. And the whole thing was weird because the Scorpions flew me out there to Vegas. You might have even been at the show.
Oh.
To do an interview with them. And then they were treating me like I, the manager was treating me like I was like some high school contest winner or something. So I finally was like, you know, Rudolph said, come on back, think of three or more questions and come on back. And I did. And the guy came in again and cut me off.
Wow.
And then Rudolph left and the guy was like basically yelling at me to pack up my stuff. And I just lost it. Like, dude, shut the f*** up. Get out of my face before I knock you out.
Yeah.
Quit treating me like I'm some idiot. You invited me. You paid money.
Wow.
You know, so anyways, all your guys were much nicer.
Yeah, there you go.
So I was, I want to find, so while I was in here, I searched through all your road cases. And the one that I found is this.
Yep.
You like hard it? To miss it.
Amazing. It's a picture of the Fonz with Jeremy's face awesomely photoshopped on it.
That was designed by Jason, actually.
That's right.
Was it really?
Yeah. I get artist credit.
For what point?
Well, he, you know...
it's on the road case. There's stickers,
on the side. I saw that. Your guy actually came in here and was more worried about covering your road case full of Fonz stickers than setting up your, your drums.
Right. We're certified crazy. We'll just put some decor up there.
The Kiss. The Kiss.
Well, Jason started calling me the Fonz, I don't know, when.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't even know why.
Fonz. Because you were just the coolest friend I had.
Only friend you had.
Yeah.
So here's the best thing. So one of the cool things about doing this show is sometimes I get asked to do those comic cons or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I always look and see who else is on the show, and if I can get them on my podcast, I'll do it. So last year, Henry Winkler.
Oh shit.
And I was like, if I get Henry, I'll do it. And dude, he showed up at my door with a yellow sweater, green pants, and a red shirt.
Not the Fonz.
It's like, what are you doing? He's like, I said, you look like an Easter egg.
Ah!
He's like, I like color.
Yep.
And anyways, he was really cool, whatever. And we had a great time. And at the end of it, I was going to set the timer to take a picture of the two of us on the phone. He's like, no, just take a selfie. Grabbed the phone in my hand, took the selfie, and gave back. That's how you do it. I was like, the Fonz, the 75-year-old Fonz, taught me how to take a selfie.
Rules.
But it was cool, man. So were you a big Happy Days guy?
I watched it. I mean, I wasn't an enormous fan, but he started calling me the Fonz. And then, so I thought, well, it would look funny on a road case. Let's do it.
So is it cool? Like, you know, you guys being best friends, you know, you guys came up through the system knowing each other. Is it cool for you guys to be touring the world together? Do you ever sometimes just sit back and go like, holy shit.
We have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes on stage too, where I look at him, I laugh. I go, can you believe it? We're doing this shit.
Yeah. A lot of experiences, a lot of crazy shit we've done together too, you know?
Well, and that's the thing too, because every band has their guys that hang out more than others, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy lives about a minute away from me, maybe two, and so it's often when we're off, we'll just go grab coffee or breakfast together just to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now that's rare. A lot of bands don't hang out.
Yeah, especially with this band.
It's not by choice for me, man. Like, he pays me to get the coffee.
Oh, come on.
Well, so then and in Hook's road case, there's a big dildo in it.
Why is that in my face? God damn it, dude.
That's funny.
There's a story here. Here, Chris, hold this, will you?
I'm going to hold the bottom end.
It's too bad this isn't video.
We'll take a picture of it and post it.
My dad's mold, man.
Yeah, wow, well, first of all, I was passed out when they cast that. And
that's huge. It's very supple and it's a big one.
I never authorized, just let the record show, I never authorized a cast mold made of my penis, but whatever.
Why is that in your road case? Is it your mascot?
Thank you. No, actually, what happened was when Phil Labonte was filling in for us last year.
Yeah.
On the very last show, we said, listen, don't go out right. We had a kabuki drop. So, like, what we want to do is we want to drop the kabuki, and then we want to have you run out on stage for the first lyric, right? He goes, okay, I can do that. Cool. So the kabuki drops. He runs right up, jumps on top of the singer's riser, the little singer riser, and right there is we gaff taped this huge cock where his microphone was supposed to be. So he goes, you... Yeah, and so why it's still hanging around, I have no idea.
It's never leaving us, man.
That's great. It's, just, it's
too big and veiny to throw away.
It's
offensive. It just freaks people out. Like, nobody says anything, but like, okay, there's a massive silicone cock right there.
How was it last year when you had Phil fill in?
It was great, man. He came right in. He had like a day and a half to prepare.
Wow.
And he did that before for Killswitch Engage when they had a singer issue.
With Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like the guy.
He's the fill-in.
Yeah. He's the guy you thought of. It's funny. I was talking to Ivan today, and he's like super friendly, happy, excited. Obviously, whatever happened, but was Phil the first guy you thought of to come in? And was it hard to make that decision?
Yeah, we really didn't have any time or choices. Yeah. And Phil is available because we looked at his schedule, and he can sing and probably pull the stuff off.
Wow.
And we knew that Phil's a nice guy because we've known him for a while. Mm-hmm. So he was, I think Zoltan texted him, "Hey man, what's happening?" And the first thing that Phil said back was, "Send me a set list."
Yeah, wow. Send me the set list. Yeah.
That's cool.
Not a, "Hey man, everything's cool. What's up with you?" Nothing. Yeah. Just send me the set list. He's
Did
so
you ever
funny.
Hear that wicked story when Dio refused to open for Ozzy when Dio was in Black Sabbath.
No kidding. Wow.
So they call Halford. And Rob Halford came. And
no
you've
way.
Never heard of this?
Really? Oh, so yes. Dio just boycotted the show. Said, I refuse.
Wasn't opening for Ozzy. I'm not doing it. For whatever reason. And they're like, well, we're still going to do the show. So Halford, I think on a day's notice, it was in 92.
Wow.
And it's out there. You can listen to it. He was... Imagine him singing like Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Wow.
Holy
yeah,
shit.
You know what? That sounds familiar.
That rules, though. That should be a DVD.
Well, yeah.
I would watch that.
Wow. But you guys had Halford sing with you last album, right?
Yes, yeah. We did.
How was that?
The killer.
Yeah.
He's such an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Putting the music that we made together aside, we have now spent several days with Rob. You know, he shows up at the shows and...
We toured with him.
You're right. We toured with him. We toured with him, and
toured with him.
Toured with Priest.
With Priest. Oh, yeah. Wow.
In Europe.
Oh, okay.
It was killer.
And every day, I look over my shoulder, and there's Rob watching our show, and I'd be like, "Oh, okay, well, that's cool." And then the next day, watching the show, and the next day, and I stopped him one time, and I said, "Rob, what's up with you? You know, coming down early and watching our show. I mean, it's loud and people are smoking and stuff. I mean, you, what's up with that?" And he goes, "Well, I love the band, eh?" Oh, cool.
Yeah. I saw him last time at one of the Golden Gods things, the award shows. And he's like, "Congratulations on Lights Go Out, Chris."
Yes.
And I was like, "You know about that? Like,
yeah.
you listen to the radio?" He's like, "I love Octane." Yeah. But that's pretty cool, man.
He's a real... dude, I mean, he's the best. And you know what? I said we all went to this like end of tour dinner together, and I was lucky enough to have grabbed the seat next to Rob. And so then I'm going to use this opportunity to just, you know, pick his brain a little bit. And one of the things he said, "Jason, never leave your band, ever. Take it from me." I go, "Really?"
Wow.
I said, "Well," he goes, "yep, you don't want to do that. Trust me." He goes, "I did it, and then I found myself, you know, playing really shitty small venues with Fight, making no money, and going, what did I do?"
Right, and hurting the Priest brand at the time, too.
Right, and in an era where he could have made a living as a solo guy. Now, forget it.
Right.
You can make a great new record, and people are like, "Oh, I'd love to listen to that for free."
Isn't that the case, though,
yeah,
right?
For sure,
yeah.
Man.
You know, I know you guys have a new record that you're done and waiting to have it released, but that's the thing. Like, it's all about the first week.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yep.
And then, you know, here's a souvenir to take home.
Yep.
You know, or just to listen to for free.
It's brutal. Yeah. And, you know, because the album invariably will leak a week before, right?
Yeah.
Something about when it goes to manufacturing, it's just a number of, it's a matter of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it goes to manufacturing, that's in the plant, and there's workers, and who knows? So we're always watching all the torrent sites going, "It's leaking."
Right.
You know,
just checking, Googling, refresh.
Yeah,
refresh.
And there was like Pirate Bay. You just can't shut them down. We had a torrent sniper that we hired. That we'd be like, "When we find them, we're going to forward it to you, and then you can go shut it down." And he was doing a great job, but there's only, but Pirate Bay, you could not stop. Yeah, you would take them down, and they would pop up somewhere else. .ru, .eu, .. You know, so
wow.
Where am I going with this?
Well, you're just talking about how the leaks and
It would be devastating because it would be like Five Finger Death Punch got your six, and it'd be like 22,000 people downloading it, and you're like,
well, it's like I think Hetfield said, you can't download a T-shirt.
No, well, that's the whole thing.
Yeah,
you can't download.
That's what we do now, right? You just come. We're merch sellers. We're clothing sellers now.
They have all that bootleg shit out there selling it, though. I mean, it's happening all the time. We've gone out there. we've taken our crew, and we would just confiscate boxes of shit, take it right from them.
So they still do that?
Oh, yeah.
Actual, wow.
Yeah. You know? And they're like, that's actually cooler than one of our designs. Let's take that.
Let's rip off the ripoff.
Yeah, it's really the bootleg. Last couple of questions, because we guys got a rock and roll show to play. When you guys decided to do Bad Company, who brought that idea to the table?
That was our first guitar player, Daryl.
Wow.
Yeah, on our first record, we only had like 40 minutes of material because we only had one record.
Yeah.
So we started to headline clubs. So we needed to stretch out the set. So that was his idea, and we just worked it up, and we started playing it.
And
ever
why
since
that
then.
Song? Just thought it'd be.
I really don't know, man. Yeah. Ivan always liked to sing it, and Daryl liked to play it. So it just lined up.
It's perfect.
They disagreed on it.
It becomes a huge hit.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Zoe and I didn't want to do it.
Really?
Yeah, Zoltan and I were like, no. What does this have to do with us? We're a heavy metal band. I was new in the band, and we had just finished the War's the Answer record, the record that I came in on, and I was very happy with it, and we worked very hard to write these songs. I'm like, why do we have to put Bad Company in the mix? It doesn't make any sense to me. But which just goes to show you that so many things just happen out of a weird fate, you know?
Right.
But I remember we were at the very end of the record, and I wasn't bringing it up because I was hoping that it would just kind of fade off into the distance, right? And at the very end of the record, somebody said, we still have to do the Bad Company cover. And I'm like, yeah. And they were looking at me going, can you just whip it up real quick, like bang it out real quick? I'm like, yeah, okay. So I tracked a whole song in about half a day.
And then it goes out and...
on a pod.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
It was.
And that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any ideas of doing other covers?
There's some that
are... some on the new record?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, surprises?
Yeah, surprises.
You should hear... Karma Chameleon with double bass. It's fucking incredible.
Hey, dude, on our last record, we did SOS.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We really did.
Really?
And it's a really dark song, and it's a very heavy arrangement, and it's got this really awesome, like, rush, like, right before the chorus. People love it.
Your guitar player is amazing, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
He's great.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, that guy.
You know, it's you can always tell the guys that have been playing for a long time.
Yeah, he's killer.
You know, last question is, who is your most favorite obscure metal band from like the 80s?
Ooh,
Venom.
Like hair rock?
No.
Yeah, sure.
Jeez, that's tough.
Obscure metal bands.
Well, I mean, like, you know, we like I said, we go back to this Nick Walsh, Mitch Malloy stuff. Like a band from the 80s that you really dug that wasn't Crew or Poison or Rat or somebody like that.
That I really did. Well, my favorite hair rock band was Bullet Boys.
Okay.
The first two records I thought were great.
That first record is amazing.
His voice is incredible in that. Yeah. Obscure, I don't know, man. I mean, I listened to everything. I had even Roxy Blue.
I had that album.
Yeah, man.
It was like, what's it called? I Want You or something?
Yeah, I
like
Want You. And they did Squeezebox.
Squeezebox.
I listened to that album back last year, and there's some really good tunes.
Cold Sweat.
Main Attraction. Oh, yeah, Cold Sweat, yeah.
Sweet F.A. King of the Hill. You ever hear that?
Never heard them.
They were a band out of St. Louis.
I think a guy had dreads in the band or something.
So they were on SBK, like Vanilla Ice's label.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Really Sweet F.A. What a great name. How about you?
Do you remember a singer named Paul Lane from Canada?
Yeah.
I remember loving that record. It was like right when Bon Jovi was really popular, and he was groomed to be the Canadian Bon Jovi.
Well, yeah, well, I think he was the singer of Danger for a while.
Well, I think he was years later. He got that gig.
He had something about your ear. The name of the album was Stick in Your Ear.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
I was a big Kick-Ax fan.
Yes, Kick-Ax.
Yeah, what about Kick Tracy?
Kick Tracy.
With their Field Trip EP, the follow-up to their debut album, No Rules.
Damn.
Chrysalis Records.
Yeah. Svengali.
Oh, they were pretty good.
Svengali
and Slick Toxic came out at the same time.
That's right.
But Svengali was Freaks. They had a song called Freaks.
Yep. We were devastated. As a local band in Toronto, those two bands were our peers, but also our competition.
Yeah.
So we're like,
when they get signed,
they went gold.
They went gold in Canada.
Svengali did, and Slick Toxic, I think.
Wow. What was your favorite Killer Dwarf song to play?
Oh, well, there was one called Out of My Way, I'm a Coming Through.
Yeah.
Out of My Way, I'm a Coming Through.
Yeah. Hey, do you remember the Electric Love Hogs?
Well, I only because I read Metal Edge magazine.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite song to play on stage tonight when you guys play?
Probably the opener, Lift Me Up. Yeah, it's pretty busy.
some tasty licks for you to play.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's definitely fun.
Well, it's a loaded question because we've played them so much that it's hard for me to think of it as, ooh, I love this.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think maybe Jekyll and Hyde's kind of fun.
Yeah.
People like that. I like the fast, aggressive stuff too.
I guess it just depends on what the crowd is into and enjoying as well.
Coming Down is a little interesting because it's kind of like got that dark. We had a song called Coming Down.
Yeah, it's kind of
a little bit more melodic, commercial rock sounding.
And what was your favorite Alice song to play?
Alice, you know that was he's weird, back,
the man behind the mask.
Right.
Duh.
He had some crazy stuff. We did this Halo of Flies instrumental, and it's like
17 minutes.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it was like, I think that was probably my favorite. I know that's not sexiest answer.
That's cool though. Yeah.
But Halo of Flies, I had to play a drum solo with the drummer in the middle of the song.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Like, we'd put the guitars down and go, da, 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 da.
Alice comes up just the night before and goes, hey, I'm thinking about doing Halo of Flies tomorrow. Jason's going, what? Oh, cool.
I almost had a nerve. Like, dude, have you seen him?
Oh yeah.
So it doesn't stop. The whole show just keeps moving.
Something every.
He doesn't talk. He doesn't go. Right. Thank you. Next song. Yeah. So that was a lot of stuff to learn to retain. Because if you think about it, it's 90 minutes straight of music.
Right.
So I'm like, 90 minutes.
All the production and everything like that.
Yeah, and he would have these crazy long, like, you know, he would come in and go, what do you guys think about doing Nurse Rosetta? And then, you know, a couple guys be like, that's cool. That would be cool. And he's like, yeah, let's learn that. And I'm like, motherfucker, shut up.
What album is that on?
I don't know. I can't learn anymore.
Do some from Raise Your Fist and Yell. Yeah, I'm in, right?
Poison was fun. Nice guy, 18. I mean, you know.
It's great, man.
Killer catalog, yeah.
Well, dudes, it's great talking. I know everyone's yelling at me for to keeping it so long, but.
Don't forget DDP Yoga.
DDP Yoga. And does the dildo have a name?
Oh God!
Gotta call him like Alistair. Okay, but Molly Cred, Alistair Fiend. Murray was the Dio devil.
I got it, dude.
What?
Jericho.
Oh no! Seven Jerichos, maybe.
You know, it's really it's
seven Jerichos.
It's too bad this is.
Let's call it that.
It's too bad this is audio only because what the visual that's happening right now is quite spectacular.
I'm swinging the dildo, man.
Yeah.
Swinging dildo. That's the name of our LA metal band.
Swinging dildo.
We're gonna open for Sweet FA.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, thanks to Jeremy and Jason. Remember, the new Five Finger Death Punch album, Injustice for None, see what they did there, is out now. Get it wherever you buy music or stream it. And Five Finger Death Punch announced a huge co-headlining summer tour with Breaking Benjamin. Dates start July 16th in Seattle, Washington. They run all the way through September. Get your tickets at fivefingerdeathpunch.com and get your cabins booked for the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea at chrisjericho.com. For as little as $150, you can hold your cabin. And remember, everything on that cabin is all inclusive. All the matches, all the rock shows, all the podcasts, live comedy, everything in between. Food even is included. You get to hang out with Hall of Famers like Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross, Mick Foley, Rey Mysterio, Raven, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, live podcasts. Killing the Town will be live. Keep it at 100 will be live. Busted Open Radio is going to be there. Beyond the Darkness is going to be live. The Unprofessional Wrestling Show is hilarious. That's there. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers, Craig Gass. Hilarious dudes are going to be there. Rock and Roll Fozzie will be there playing a bunch of shows with all of our top 10 hits, two of them. Corey Taylor will be there from Stone Sour and Slipknot. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, straight from Motorhead, right on the cruise. King, the Dives are going to be there. So many great bands. So many great. The new announcement this week, Brian Cage is going to be there. The Effing Machine. I mean, come on. Everybody is calling, wanting to be a part of this cruise. And of course, after selling out All in 30 minutes, the entire Bullet Club is going to be on the Jericho Cruise. Kenny Omega, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, Marty Scurll, Adam Page, the Young Bucks. All of them will be competing in the Sea of Honor tournament. The winner gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Everyone's going to be there. Dalton Castle, the Dogs, Kenny King, Cheeburger, Jay Lethal, Chris Daniels. We got the Women of Honor. Mandy Leon is going to be there. Brandi Rhodes, Kelly Klein. You go find out all the information at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Go do that now. Remember, the Rock of Jericho returning to Sirius XM. That was on, it's on tonight, if it's a Friday, 6:30. Friday, May 18th, the return of the Rock of Jericho on Octane at Sirius XM. Go check that out. I'll be playing my favorite songs and doing whatever the hell else I want to do. And that is tonight, if you're listening to this on Friday, at 6:30 p.m. on Sirius XM Octane. And that's about all I got. So go check out your cabins at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Go check out the Rock of Jericho on Sirius XM Octane tonight. And the classic album Clash returns on Wednesday. This time, Ozzy Osbourne, Dire of a Madman, versus Blizzard of Oz. And I got Fozzy with us. Rich Ward, Frank Fonseret, Billy Gray is going to be there. And Merlin Alderslade, one of the greatest names of all time, the editor of Metal Hammer magazine in England, is going to join us on the debate on which two of the classic Ozzy records is better, Blizzard of Oz or Dire of a Madman. Until then, stay cool, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah!